It's 4:06, and you're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up, a lot of universities around the country have been debating whether or not to include trigger warnings on academic materials. We'll talk to a guest who says we don't need warning label policies in classrooms.
But first, we take a look at the intersection of technology and medicine, where things are moving quickly and have the potential to change healthcare as we know it.
Futurist Rebecca Ryan joins us in studio now. She's the founder and co-owner of Next Generation Consulting. Rebecca, good to see you again.
And wonderful to see you.
Well, let's get caught up now. What has been catching your eye in terms of that intersection we were talking about where technology and medicine are taking us?
Well, one of the things that people may have seen recently are these new glasses that correct colorblindness, And you can buy them for $277 on Amazon. And for those of you who remember being in school and doing the colorblindness test, if you passed, good on you. If you did not pass, $277 will make it right.
That's so interesting. So we can correct colorblindness with glasses. How does it work?
Well, I am not a scientist, but this is my understanding. Our ability to see, for example, if you say something that makes me blush, like your last guest may have, the ability for you to see me blush has to do with how we pick up pigment. So this neuroscientist recognized this and he said, well, it would be really helpful for people to be able to see blushing or in the lab environment to see more definition around blood cells. So he invented these glasses. And then with an entrepreneur, he said, we're going to go to the TV studios because HDTV would love to see brighter colors, more pigment, and not so much, but they realized sort of accidentally, this also corrects colorblindness. So, ta-da, here we have the AO2s.
That is interesting. It could help solve some arguments with my husband and I about green and brown.
Oh, wow. I did not think about divorce mitigation, but that
right.
is an awesome application.
Obviously an application to think about. Let's go to nanomedicine. Now, nanotechnology has been around for a long time, but it's always driving forward. And there's some really cool new stuff going on with nanomedicine. What are you seeing there?
Well, this is actually a cool little backstory. So, you know, IBM has been working on, like, you know, big data and all this kind of stuff. And this brainiac scientist doctor from the Institute of Bioengineering and Nanotechnology in Singapore approached one of the lead researchers at IBM and said, enough with this big data. You need to be helping me solve the healthcare issues of the world. And he sort of said, okay. So they have got a few really cool inventions. Like the first one is, for any of you who know what MRSA is, I think a lot of wrestlers know what this is. It's a boil. It starts on your skin. It's highly contagious through skin-to-skin contact, and it can be deadly. And they together have developed a nanoparticle that will attack this and kill it, right? And it's completely biodegradable. So it's not, you know, sometimes chemotherapy, it both kills the pathogen, but it also harms the person. And a lot of these nanoparticles don't do that, which is super exciting.
Right, especially for hospitals. Hospitals are very worried about MRSA right now. So is this something that's available now, or is it still sort of in the trials?
This is the three that these guys are working on right now are in beta, but I think the MRSA nanoparticle is, I think you could sign up for a trial now if you had it. I mean, this is a big challenge for healthcare facilities.
Oh, yeah. And along that same line, we are seeing some nanoparticles being used to deliver drugs.
Yeah. So for those of you who know or love somebody who's had breast cancer, he or she has probably been treated with Herceptin. And what these scientists have been able to do is figure out how to bind Herceptin into a liquid gel so that it kind of goes directly to the tumor. And the efficacy rate is amazing. Like if you have Herceptin delivered in this nanoparticle way, you are killing 70% of the tumor compared to when Herceptin is just delivered via chemotherapy and the tumor isn't shrinking at all. So it's terrific.
So some big stuff coming down
Huge.
The pike there. That's so interesting. And this is one that also works on delivery of dosage, intelligent pills.
Yeah. So Philips has this intelligent pill. So for those of your listeners who take a multivitamin every day, it's about the size of a multivitamin and your medication is in it. So you pop the pill. And this is being used for GI issues like Crohn's disease, colon cancer. And the pill distributes the medicine in just the right dose internally. So it's not a shot. It's not a pill. It's a smart pill. So it's giving you these doses over time. And then your body naturally does what it does with the pill itself.
That sounds like a nice way to make sure you get the exact dosage if people are worried about that.
Totally.
Well, moving on to surgery now. So a given is that surgery is expensive, right? In the United States, surgery is expensive. You hope your insurance carrier will pay for it, but there are people who are working on cheaper surgery, and we've got some news from India there.
Yeah, and India is kind of like one example about of, you know, countries that have large populations and large pools of patients, but not a lot of money. So they need to figure out, how do we do really efficient delivery of things in for many, many, many people? And so I think a lot of the healthcare innovation about how healthcare is delivered, the future of medicine, is in some of those countries. But one of the things that has existed in India for a while is $100 cataract surgery.
Yeah, I feel like I'm not hearing you right, but yet I am. $100 cataract surgery. How do you pull that off?
Well, you focus on having the cost of treatment be as low as possible. You figure out how to pull apart all the parts of the surgery so that the most skilled surgeons are doing the most important and specialized parts of the surgery. So all the parts of the surgery that somebody with lower skills can learn to do, they would do those parts of the surgery. And they figured out how to bring the cost of the ocular lens that you need to replace the lens that gets taken out be very, very low. So it's pretty amazing what's happening
there. So they break it down sort of to its component parts and make sure that it's exactly the most efficient, cost-effective way to do it.
Yeah, it's like what Henry Ford would have done with the, you know, the assembly line. It's similar.
Well, which begs the question, if I can get $100 cataract surgery in India, I'm going to feel ripped off if I get one here and I'm paying thousands of dollars. And this is the kind of question which has people, a growing trend of medical tourism, I guess you call it.
Yeah, 75,000 Americans last year went to other countries to get something done. The most, can you guess what some of the most common treatments were that they got?
I would say dentistry and plastic surgery.
For sure. You are. Those are the top two, but in the reverse order. So first cosmetic surgery, then dentistry, and then heart surgery.
Heart surgery?
I know. It's crazy.
Where do people go for cheap heart surgery?
I cannot tell you. I don't know, actually. But the CDC, this is interesting, they put out a yellow pages for medical tourism and increasingly transplant tourism.
Oh, boy.
So you need a kidney? I'll tell you where to go.
So you'd think that would augur some changes in our healthcare system here. We don't want people going elsewhere to get medical treatment, do we?
Oh, there are tons of questions about whether it's safe, whether it's ethical. You know, is it ethical? We know that the top, can you call them exporting countries of kidneys, for example, are China, the Philippines, and Pakistan.
Wow. Well, so that's something we'll be watching for sure. That's going to keep on developing. And let's talk next about 3D printers. Now, this is this thing we've heard a lot about. Usually you hear it for applications that don't involve necessarily health, certainly things in the body. What are we seeing there?
Well, so a couple of years ago, this kid at the University of Wisconsin, Eric Ronning, won an award because he was able to print on a 3D printer a fully functioning hand. Now, this is really cool because if you're an amputee, the idea of getting a fully functioning hand is very exciting. But what's really a mind blower is the cost is coming down so much, you could print this at home for $20.
Wow.
Need a hand? $20 later, you've got one. But the other thing that's interesting about 3D printing is, you know, that 3D hand that that student created, that was made of plastic, right? Now we are doing bioprinting. So what scientists can literally do is break down human cells from biopsies or stem cells. They put them in a petri dish, right? And so what happens is you get sort of this biological ink. It gets fed into the 3D printer, and then you can print organs, body parts. It's all possible.
That's almost too much for my brain to understand. I hear your words and my brain is trying to compute at the same time, but it's happening.
This is why I enjoy being on your show. Just the inner meltdown.
Right.
For all of you listening, she looks terrific, even though she seems to be melting down internally.
Definitely. Maybe I need to 3D print a new brain or something, but this is going to happen. It sounds like it's going to change the way that we work with people in hospitals.
Well, if you think about it, if we can print a new kidney at home, maybe we don't need to do transplant tourism. Just saying.
All right. Well, let's go on. We've got a lot of stuff to talk about. Robotics. Now, this is fascinating. In Japan, apparently, I'm zeroing in on probably not the big picture thing, but robots are already being used, you've said, to work with the elderly, and they teach exercise classes.
Yeah, there's this little like 12-inch robot. He's about a foot tall, and he leads exercise classes. So he does the activity, and all of the elders in the pensioners' home repeat the activity. So it's a way to keep the elders active, their elders active. But what's even more exciting, I think, is that the Japanese government is investing to bring the cost of robotics down to the point where people wouldn't have to go to a nursing home. So these are robots that are amazing. They're able to help elders with all their acts of daily living, from getting out of bed. They remind them to take their medications if they need them. They help them use the bathroom. All the things that you might want an in-home nurse to help with, the robots are going to be able to do.
Wow, it's so fascinating. We could keep going, but we're out of time. Rebecca, thank you so much for joining us.
I'll see you again.
All right, that was Rebecca Ryan, an economist, author, and futurist. She's the founder and co-owner of Next Generation Consulting.